iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Jerry Robinson, who's a minister, but he's written a book entitled Bankruptcy of Our Country, and it really goes into the background of what's happening. People do not understand that there is an organized, orchestrated effort to destroy the currency of this nation and to bring the financial system of the entire world down. How, indeed, would they ever be able to get every nation in the world to go into a one-world government if they did not have a worldwide crisis where countries face two alternatives, either chaos or joining the world economic system? So this is exactly what is taking place today, but they can't let the American people understand that. They want to tell you, oh my goodness, we just had this subprime mortgage crisis, and this is what created the problem, and oh, it was the brokers, the irresponsible brokers who actually lent money to people who were not eligible for it. It was the appraisers who ran up the price of the loans that were given to people who couldn't afford the loans. It was the people who borrowed the money for a home that they couldn't afford. It was the people who bundled the mortgages, the subprime mortgages, into bonds that were sold throughout the world. It was the rating agencies that actually rated these bonds triple A. It was the people who issued the derivative contracts, the insurance policies on the bonds, and this promised then if they did not pay the monthly payments and or redeem the money at the end of the period of the loan, why the bond, why of course the people get their money back. Let me tell you, they were all in this, more or less, but this was really coordinated by the Federal Reserve System and by Alan Greenspan, who was encouraging people to take out adjustable rate mortgages, knowing full well they were going to be a disaster. And then it was Alan Greenspan who was encouraging the use of derivatives, even though the people like Warren Buffett had referred to derivatives as financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent but potentially lethal, with the understanding that they could pull down the whole world monetary system. And it wasn't that nobody knew what was happening. Every one of our state attorney generals understood. They were together. They held their meetings. They said, we've got to stop this. It's got to destroy the system. And, of course, they were blocked by the Bush administration because, of course, the people who really ran the Bush administration is the what I refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness. They wanted to precipitate this whole collapse. And, of course, when Elliot Spitzer tried to tell the story on the 14th of February of 2008 in an article that was published in the Washington Post, within a little over three and a half weeks, the FBI leaked a story about his cavorting with a prostitute to detract attention from what Elliot Spitzer was saying to his moral improprieties. And why? Because the last thing they want the American people to understand is this whole thing has been carefully orchestrated and long-term planning. Well, Jerry Robinson is with us. Thank you very much for being with us, Jerry.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, you are a minister of the gospel?
Yes.
I'm going to ask you just to speak up just a little bit there.
Sure, you bet. Is that better?
That's ever so much better. But it's a long way from being a minister of the gospel to writing a book on finances, on the bankruptcy of our nation. I'm going to ask you to sort of just hang on to that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Jerry Robinson, who is actually a minister, but he also has studied actually economics. In fact, many people wondered why he was studying the ministry and economics. I'm going to let you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, who you are, and why you wrote the book, and then, of course, what you are anticipating as far as the future of our nation is concerned.
Well, sure, Dr. Stan. Interestingly enough, I'm a trained economist, studied economics at the University of Tulsa, and have given lectures all around the world on economics. I'm currently an economic consultant, economic strategist, so I help people, in times of crisis, obviously. But also, I'm also an ordained minister as well. I always saw a connection between economics and the Bible, and I think that's pretty much a foregone conclusion in most thinking, because the Bible has a lot to say about money, wealth, possessions. It has over 2,000 scriptures alone on those topics. And it's not because God wants us all to be, immensely wealthy, but instead the reason I believe that God has placed all these scriptures in the Bible on money is because he knows that money is the chief competitor for man's heart. It is a tremendous deceiver. Money has great power over a people, over a society. Our founding fathers knew this. They knew that whoever controlled the money supply of a nation would wield a tremendous amount of power over that country, over that nation. So I always saw a great connection between money and of course, the Bible. The reason that I wrote the book, Dr. Stan, was because I saw a dramatic need for this book. There's a lot of books that have come out on the economic crisis talking about, the Republicans or the Democrats or so-and-so did this or Senator so-and-so did this. Our problems are so much more deeply rooted than just a simple novel phenomenon that might have happened just recently. We have some very, very grave problems in our nation that are not being dealt with. They're not being discussed by our nation's leaders, at least openly. And the public is not fully informed as to the real roots and the real origins of this economic crisis. Instead, they have been led to believe by the mainstream media that it's merely a political snafu or a political phenomenon.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Jerry Robinson. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Jerry Robinson, who is an ordained minister. He is also a trained economist and as it works in the financial consultant capacity, but he's written a book on bankruptcy. And the bankruptcy really of our nation, he points out in his book, that America has a dual problem. We are bankrupt financially. We are also bankrupt morally. And, of course, we have to understand that the two of them, in many respects, go right together. Because, of course, instead of being directed by God, we're directed by what we want. We want more. I mean, isn't that the American way? You want to shop until you drop. You want as much as you can. And, of course, you'll go do whatever you have to get it. Well, I'm not suggesting you'll have anything to do with honest, but you get into the stock market, and you'll anticipate those stocks are going to give you all sorts of wealth, and you really think that you're getting lots more money, but what you don't understand is that maybe your stock portfolio went up for a while, but at the same time the value of your currency was going down, so you really weren't making any money at all. But nobody explained to you there's a long-range plan to depreciate and destroy the value of our currency. Jerry, you picked the story up there.
Well, there's no doubt that we are on a road that's going to lead to a totally bankrupt currency. Our currency still has some strength. We are at the final stages of our fiat currency, and of course all fiat means is that it's government mandated. It's no longer backed up by any type of metal, you know, as it used to be. In 1971, they took the dollar off of the gold standard, and since that time, we have been literally in a perpetual free fall in value. If you take a look at even further back, whenever the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, it became the third central bank of the United States. For many, many decades, we did not have a central bank. And they cleverly and craftily, those in power, were able to implement another central bank. And this central bank now issues all of the currency. It issues the currency. It wields control over our money supply. And now it's moved us into a place where it is printing money at a tremendous pace. And that money is not backed up by anything. Every single dollar bill in every single person's pocket is a debt instrument. It is debt. Money itself is completely debt. It has no value. It has no intrinsic value. It is actually it actually has a lien against it. Every single dollar that's in existence came about because there was a lien against that note. So our money is debt. This is not really being discussed too much in the mainstream.
But I think the other thing is that most people don't understand is that most money is not money, it's credit. In other words, it's an electronic entry, and the banks are required to have a certain amount of physical money. But on top of that, they create this credit out of nothing, and of course that becomes an electronic entry, and then that is traded back and forth. So there's a massive increase in the supposed money out there, but it's not real money, it's all imaginary. And certainly there's absolutely nothing behind it, and that whole system which is behind it is just crumbling today.
It is. Well, at least it appears to be crumbling. You know, there's two ways to look at this. One way is to claim ignorance, that our leaders, you know, they implemented this system, and after 6,000 years of failed history, they simply just did it again. They just totally failed, and it was a total accident, and they didn't mean for it to happen, and it just happened that way. That's the ignorance plea. The other idea is that there's maliciousness behind this, that this is actually a planned decline. And anyone with any kind of background in economics can tell you that if they've studied the money supply, that the way the leaders of our nation are going right now, they're going in a very, very ignorant direction. And so we have to wonder, are our leaders completely ignorant, or are they taking us down a certain way for a very specific reason? I think that most of your listeners would agree that we see a global governance coming into play. We fully expect to see a global governance in power over the next several decades. And so this may be a precursor or a preface to this new era that we're moving into. You can even see it in the language of our new president, who is very much against the sovereignty of our nation and much more prefers a global view. And while I think there are some benefits to that idea, I think it also sets up perfectly where the international bankers would like to take our economy.
Well, I certainly agree with you. Now, certainly you point out in your book that America has been living simply on loans from other countries. We fight wars, but we don't tax the people. After all, you tax the people for the wars, people that oppose the wars. So we simply go ahead and borrow the money from our children and from our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, to finance all the things we're doing. I mean, you can't keep living on debt, and yet that's what we're doing. Our biggest creditors are China and Japan, buying our debt, and we are totally dependent upon them. They stop lending us money, the whole house of cards comes down. Could you pick up on some of those themes that you discuss in your book?
Well, sure. I mean, the idea and the concept of sacrifice has all been but lost on this generation. You know, during World War II, Roosevelt actually ceased production of appliances and of new homes and of automobiles. He issued war bonds. He deployed all types of strategies to help pay for the war because he did not want the next generation to have to shoulder the burden. This new generation It doesn't even feel like we're in a war. We are currently still in a global war. It doesn't feel like it at all. There's no war bonds. There's no. In fact, our government does not tell us to save. In fact, they discourage saving by the tax code. And in fact, they encourage consumption. So we live in an era now that is fueled by consumption. It's dependent upon consumption. Our banking system is totally dependent upon consumption. And our overconsumption is unsustainable. The levels that we consume at now take up 70% of our GDP. People like to brag about our gross domestic product, about how large of a nation we are. But when they break down the numbers, they'll find that 70% of our large GDP is based upon consumption. We are expert consumers. And so that concept of sacrifice is going to have to come back into play because the laws of economics cannot be suspended forever. I mean, we're going to have to pay for what we've bought. Somebody certainly has to. And our national debt now is just soaring. We have an inflation trifecta with the Federal Reserve printing money, the White House spending money, and then, of course, the Treasury Department bailing out companies. I mean, inflation is all but certain in the future because the money printing won't stop. I mean, so, you know, what's very interesting is we have not had any leaders step up to the plate and say, look, you're going to have to save money. We're going to have to raise taxes. And we can't drop bombs in every country every time we get mad at them. Nobody's stepping up to the plate saying that. They certainly wouldn't win any elections. And then, of course, you totally leave out the factor of the entitlement benefits, you know, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. These systems are bankrupting our nation as we speak. By 2040, the projected number now is $60 trillion that we owe simply to pay for those benefits, and we have no money to pay that. So by all definitions, Dr. Stan, we are completely bankrupt as a nation. And I guess the lag factor is going to leave us in deception for a little bit longer, but eventually the house of cards will collapse.
And, Chris, you point out the fact that America has an empire. Now, the average American has no concept of that. We don't want an empire. Why we go overseas, we want to help people. We want to bring democracy. We want to get rid of corrupt people like Saddam Hussein and put in righteous people like Mr. Maliki, you know, of course, condones torture and murder and assassination and thievery, and they just found 1,000 of their employees were corrupt. Well, that didn't happen under Saddam Hussein. You were afraid to be corrupt there. They'd simply lop off your head. But, you know, certainly we've invested countless billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars on war. As you mentioned, we have our troop station in 120 nations. I think it's probably closer to 130, but I won't quibble over 10 nations. We have 700 bases overseas. The average American is never told that the real purpose of our American military is to maintain an empire. They don't want the American people to understand that. Have you ever had a feeling the average American has no idea of the imperialistic policies of the people who control both political parties?
America is a total empire. I mean, there's never been an empire quite the size or the strength of the American empire. And in fact, you brought up Saddam Hussein, and September 24th, 2000, Saddam Hussein emerged from a meeting where he decided, after some deliberation with his cabinet, to go ahead and decouple the dollars from his oil supply and decided to move to euros. Now, this was before the euro really had its big run. By 2002, he had fully implemented this. So he had moved. People don't realize that in order to buy a barrel of oil in this world, you have to have a dollar bill. I mean, if you're living in Japan and you want a barrel of oil, well, you don't have any options. You have to buy it because you're on an island that has very few natural resources. So you need to buy a barrel of oil from the Middle East. Well, in order to do that, the system has been set up for our empire where everybody needs a dollar to buy oil. Well, this creates an artificial demand for dollars, and we get the benefit from that. But now, so Japan has to do one or two things. They can walk down to the currency bank and exchange and pay an exchange rate, or they can come up with an idea. Let's say, what do Americans want to buy? Maybe we'll sell them a Honda. So they develop a car, or they develop whatever. They develop clothes, and they sell them to the American consumer, and they get those dollars, and that way they can afford to buy their oil. Well, this system, this petrodollar system, is breaking down because many nations are moving away from the dollar for their oil. We see this with Iraq, which did this in 2002. The next thing you saw was Saddam hanging from a tree. You have Iran, who now is part of the Axis of Evil. You have Syria, who did the same thing. They're part of the Axis of Evil. North Korea, Axis of Evil. Venezuela did the same thing, Axis of Evil. I mean, you have this motion here where people, where many of our enemies are beginning to decouple their oil supply from dollars. And
hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Jerry Robinson. Well, you go right ahead. And Sydney, I agree with you that we have been able to dominate the world, not only militarily, but financially. But the day of reckoning is coming. You can't keep spending more than you're taking in, more than you're exporting indefinitely. And we've been able, of course, to print a tremendous amount of money, and we've been able to export our inflation to other countries. But the day of reckoning is coming when that inflation, all this money that we've printed, because inflation has to do with money supply, not with prices. They simply reflect the money supply. Or all those, that inflation is going to come home to haunt us. Would you agree?
Oh, of course. Yeah, the inflation is going to be bad. And, of course, one of the things that will cause it, of course, is the current amount of money that's being printed, which obviously is a problem. But also, you know, again, back to this petrodollar system, when this system breaks down, when other nations begin to realize that the dollar is not a safe haven for their oil sales, and they begin to move to more stable currencies, or to even to a basket of currencies, as has been proposed, this is going to deflate the artificial demand that's currently for the U.S. dollar that you and I both enjoy. I mean, when our leaders went to Iraq to bring democracy, as you say, we should have received oil profits out of that. I mean, we're certainly not in the situation as the world's largest debtor nation to be going around and lecturing to people and then bringing democracy to them and paying for it. I mean, we don't have that kind of money. We can't even take care of our own. We have no business trying to go over to other nations and fix their problems. And so every American in the world should have said, yes, we want the oil. I mean, when oil prices go through the roof, we would probably enjoy having some of Iraq's oil fields. But everybody was so sensitive about that. No, it's not about oil. It's about bringing democracy. This whole system is falling apart, and I think the charades behind it, like you've brought up, are going to become fully exposed because we've been sold a bill of goods. I mean, the system as it is currently set up is very, very imperialistic. And Dr. Stan, I think you're very correct in assuming that something diabolical is behind this. This is certainly not set up in our own best interest. Something is going very, very wrong behind the curtain.
Well, what do you think this is behind the curtain? I mean, certainly we have very, very strong views on this, but I'd like to know what you think.
I think what we're probably going to see is we're going to see a decline of the United States of America, and we're going to see an incline of the Middle East. You know, based upon the Bible, the very first 12 chapters of the Bible in Genesis focus on two cities. They focus on Jerusalem and Babylon. And then, of course, in the very last 12 chapters of the Bible in Revelation, there's two cities that come into prominence. You see Jerusalem and you see Babylon. And so I think that, you know, many in the West have been somewhat misguided by thinking that America plays such a large role in all of the biblical, prophecies, so to speak. I think that America has certainly a role in some form and fashion, but I believe that the spotlight is moving slowly but surely back over to the Middle East. Of course, they sit on over 62% of the world's oil supply. They're certainly going to be well positioned in the next few decades. But I think you're going to see a move back. You're going to see a move back to Europe and to the Middle East. There's even studies about this, that every 500 years it moves from the East to the West. It's going to be a hard thing and a humbling thing for the United States. I mean, as we begin to decline and as others begin to increase, it's going to hurt our pride.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Jerry Robinson. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jerry Robinson. We're talking about his book, Bankruptcy. What's the full title?
It's called Bankruptcy of Our Nation. And then, of course, it has 12 key strategies to protect yourself from these uncertain times.
Well, we'll let you talk about those in just a moment. Again, The Bankruptcy of Our Nation, and it's a fascinating book. It points out that America is an imperialistic structure. We're doing all this on borrowed money. Ordinarily, when we fight wars, why we pay for them. And this is what we did in the Second World War. Not now. We're not asked to make any sacrifices. We sent our boys over there to fight and bleed and suffer and die in a war. Of course, a lot of the money is coming from the Taliban in Afghanistan, and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan is coming from the Pakistani military, which we just happen to be financing. Nobody ever points that out. And so a lot of the money for the insurgents in Iraq was coming from our good friends in Saudi Arabia, who were keeping in power. Nothing as it appears to be, but under any circumstances, we're not being asked to make any sacrifices for the war. In fact, everything is about cutting taxes. Oh, we've got to keep taxes down. We've got to keep the people happy. Oh, we're going to go after maybe the rich people a little bit, but we're going to keep people happy. And you actually talk about how in the past the taxes have been much, much higher, but now they're being kept to almost as if they want a sauce. Keep the people from being concerned. Don't rattle the cage. Don't let the people understand what's going on. As long as they have lots of money and they're fat and happy and we've got great consumption, why, nobody's going to be concerned about what's really going on behind the scenes. But now that whole thing is sort of coming to an end, and we certainly are having real economic problems. Of course, the administration is pushing, spending and consumption rather than saving and production. Nothing we're doing is, of course, encouraging production. We're giving, billions, tens of billions, $50 billion at least to General Motors as they're transferring their production to communist China. We're giving a great deal of money to Chrysler so that Fiat, it was an Italian company, can take over control of an American corporation, and they're not putting up any money. Does anybody ever wonder what's really going on? Well, Jerry, certainly, as we talk about it, the American people really have never been asked to make any sacrifice for the Vietnam War, for the First Gulf War, for the Second Gulf War. Don't you think if they were being asked to make sacrifices, they might not be so anxious to send our boys over to fight and bleed and suffer and die in wars like this?
Well, sure, but that would get in the way of the plan. So they choose not to ask any type of sacrifice because it allows them to continue on with what they're wanting to achieve. And that's really a telling thing. You know, and back to the inflation bit that you just mentioned, something very interesting about how the last several months have played out. You know, we've had a major crisis. I think everybody recognizes that we've been through some massive problems. They can certainly open up their brokerage account statements and see that we have had a certain ride, and things are beginning to look up a little bit now in the stock market all of a sudden. People are getting a little glimmer of hope now. But what's interesting about all this is that during this whole time, during all of this time, we have actually seen, you brought up tax rates, we've seen historically low tax rates during this whole time. We suffered through all this with very historically low tax rates. Imagine if what's going to happen when those tax rates go up. We also had very low inflation rates, historically low inflation rates. What happens when inflation goes up? What kind of crisis will that create? We had historically low interest rates. All throughout this crisis, when people were complaining and they were talking about the stock market, the interest rates were extremely historically low. What happens when those go back up? What's going to happen then? We also had relatively low gas prices during this crisis. What happens when those go up? We also had foreigners like China and India and Europe continuing to buy our debt. Well, they're beginning to wonder if they still want to do that. What happens in a crisis when they don't do that anymore? We also had the petrodollar system in place where people chose to use dollars to buy oil. What happens when that system breaks down and they want to use euros? What does a crisis look like under those circumstances? So really, we had a very benign trip through the backwoods with this economic crisis. We did not see the full frontal attack that we expect to see whenever we begin to see inflation rising, interest rates being raised to confront that inflation, taxes being raised, and, of course, gas prices going through the roof.
Well, we've had it very, very good for a long period of time, but the question is that going to continue, or are we at the end of a cycle? And I believe we're at the end of the cycle. I think that the point that Jerry makes in his book is that America is certainly going into decline at this point, as all empires have. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh's not going to tell you. Sean Hannity's not going to tell you. This is the other people are not going to tell you, but we have an empire. That has been the true purpose behind everything. America is to dominate the whole world, but I believe it's a prelude to bring us into the new world order and the new world currency and the new world religion. Well, Jerry, you go right ahead here, and I don't mean to keep interrupting you here, but we have to take the breaks as they come through. The computer really runs the program. I just sit here and I go along with it. But
sure.
You certainly go ahead with the things that really concern you about what's going on. Do you think America is going to move into a period of decline, as all great empires have throughout the ages?
Of course. I mean, there's absolutely, positively no doubt. America is unfortunately moved from being the greatest creditor nation in world history as of 1980 in three short decades to 2009 presently. We stand as the world's greatest debtor nation in world history. Never before in history has there been a greater debtor nation at all in history, in the world. And so, you know, many Christians or people who believe in the Bible would be quick to say that debt is described as slavery in the Bible. It says the borrower is a slave to the lender. So what really, when we think about this biblically, contextually, when we think about this biblically, America, if it's the greatest debtor nation in world history, it also makes it the greatest slave nation in world history. The land of the free and the home of the brave, now the greatest slave nation in world history. And people say, well, that can't be true. But the truth is that they are not debt-free. They cannot pay off their visa and become debt-free. They will never be debt-free. We live in a nation where debt is basically in our pockets. We work for debt. We work for debt money. So it's a very backward system. And when you don't, in fact, I love what Henry Ford said about our monetary system. He said, if the people of America ever truly understood the monetary system of the United States, there would be a revolution overnight. Ignorance is what's caused us to get to this place. Awareness is the answer. And awareness will certainly not happen on Fox News. It's certainly not going to happen with Rush Limbaugh, like you mentioned. It's not going to happen by listening to AM radio and listening to all the political jargon that's out there. The answer is not in politics. That's actually part of the problem.
Well, I agree with you, Chris. I believe that behind everything going on, there are powerful spiritual forces which are manipulating the course of world events, and things that happen go on really don't make sense. So many of them don't make sense from a logical point of view. And if they don't make sense logically, there has to be another explanation. We'll be right back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Jerry Robinson. Jerry, would you like to get your website off? Would you like to tell people how they can get copies of your book?
Absolutely. The book is called Bankruptcy of Our Nation. They can purchase it through our website at jrmi.org. We have free shipping there. Or they can go to any fine local bookstore and pick it up at their local bookstore called Bankruptcy of Our Nation. And we also put out a financial newsletter that's free, and if they'd like to receive that, they can just go to our website and send us an email and just tell us to send out the free financial newsletter, and we'd be happy to put them on that list.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Now, what is your website?
It's www.jrmisandmaryi.org.
One more time?
JRMI.org.
All right, fine. Now, do you have a telephone number or anything of that sort you'd like to get out?
Yes. They can actually phone in their order if they prefer, or they can call in and ask to be on the newsletter, but it's simply just dial 918 area code 827-5764. That's 918-827-5764.
All right, fine. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Jerry Robinson, my telephone number. Here is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, you know, one of the greatest things is the fact that the average American doesn't understand that all of our currency is based upon debt. There is nothing behind our money. It's simply we accept it because other people will accept it. Only trouble is that people throughout the world increasingly are saying, well, we really don't want the currency. In fact, a few years ago, while there were a number of countries where people did not want to accept American dollars now, then they ran the dollar up. The dollar, though at one time, just a few years ago, was 120 in comparison with a basket of currency where the average was 100. Today, the value of the currency certainly is down around 71, 72. So basically the dollar has lost not quite, but almost half of its value. And it won't be long before I fear that other countries and people in other countries will not want the dollar because they realize it is rapidly losing its value. The only thing that's really keeping it going is that all the other currencies are fiat currencies and they're losing value as well. Well, we've got, Ian calling us from Ontario, Canada. And if you're out there and you'd like to give us a call, the number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Go right ahead, Ian.
Hi, Dr. Stan. I thought there some quotations from John Maynard Keynes almost 100 years ago would be germane to what you're discussing. First of all, he said in 1917 in a letter to Duncan Grant, I work for a government I despise for ends I think criminal. And he clarified that in 1919 after the World War One conference. What was the name of it? The Versailles conference.
Versailles, right.
And he said this, specifically about the debauching of the currency you're talking about. King said, Lenin was right. There is no subtler, no surer means of overturning the existing basis of society than to debauch the currency. The process engages all the hidden forces of economic law on the side of destruction and does it in a manner which not one man in a million is able to diagnose.
And that's exactly what's going on today. Jerry, what do you think about what Ian is saying?
It's a fantastic quote, Ian. I mean, that's, in fact, what we actually placed that quote in the book because it is a very revealing quote from a very brilliant economist, even though his policies have led in many ways to our current problems with government being the answer. He was no doubt a brilliant man, and he understood fully what he was doing in his book, The Economic Consequences of the Peace. He knew exactly what he was doing at Bretton Woods. Of course, he viewed government as the answer, but that's a fantastic, fantastic view. You know, one of the things about inflation that is very, very difficult for Americans to understand, we live in a bubble. You know, we wake up on this planet, we're born in this generation, and all we understand is that in order to retire comfortably in America, you have to go to the stock market, or you have to earn a rate of return. Now, this is really what's happened over time. The dollar has become so valueless over time, it loses value. It's like a commodity. It's not math. Money is not math, and math is not money. I mean, money itself is a commodity, and it loses value. It perishes over time. And so because of that, that's because of inflation. We have to, you and I, Dr. Stan and Ian, we all have to go out into the stock market, and we have to try to get wild gains just to be able to retire comfortably. 97% of the American public has to retire dependent on friends, family, or federal government because they lose.
Of course, I think one of the points you make in your book is the fact that even though your stock market portfolio is going up in value, because of the inflation, you're actually losing money. That was an incredible thing, and yet that's absolutely true. Would you like to cover that?
Well, back in a more honest age, a man could work. He could hold his money in something that didn't lose value. Inflation is a new phenomenon. When I say new, I should probably footnote that and say that it's a paper money phenomenon. It doesn't occur with normal intrinsic types of commodities, unless we find a tremendous amount of gold all of a sudden. That could cause inflation in that particular commodity. But inflation itself is kind of an unnatural occurrence in our modern world. And so it creates a tremendous amount of force upon our portfolios. It creates a tremendous amount of force, negative force, upon our savings. And so it forces us to have to do wild things. And the financial industry is right there ready to be the beneficiary of that. So many people are very frustrated at having to try to save money and, of course, seeing it lose value over time. It's a very negative system, Dr. Stan. It's a very, very evil system, I would even venture to say. And it's very misunderstood, as Keynes pointed out.
You're absolutely right. And, of course, another thing that Keynes said when somebody pointed out that this whole thing is not going to work forever, he said, well, in the end, we all die.
And in the long run, we're all dead.
Right, and of course the trouble is we're in the death throes of the financial system and nobody's told the average American. Ian, do you have anything else you'd like to say before we let you go?
Well, it just confirms to me that if you look at the history in the last 40 years, we've seen that governments left and right have continued this destructive policy of the debauching of our currency, especially the U.S. dollar that has been the world currency. The only one in the last century who tried to do actually anything practical and concrete about it was John F. Kennedy with his treasury dollars. And, of course, look what happened to him. It confirms in my mind the suggestion that there's really a Trotskyite plan of chaos and control that's concerned about bringing in the command and control structure that we've never seen before.
You're absolutely right. Hey, thanks very much for calling.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Bye-bye. And let's go to David, who's calling from Vermont. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, David. How are you doing? David, are you there?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
The other day on 60 Minutes, I heard Bernanke, I think I heard him say that the Federal Reserve pays for itself and the profits go back to the Treasury. Could you please explain if that's true and how could the Federal Reserve be making profits that it could be returning to the Treasury?
All right. Would you like to pick that up, Jerry, and explain how the Federal Reserve makes money, and we are told it goes back to the Treasury? The thing is that we're not allowed to audit their books. They've never been audited privately. They're only audited by the Federal Reserve. Would you trust somebody who is dealing with billions of dollars to audit the properly? And of course, a lot of the profit. Well, I'm going to let Jerry tell you. He's more of an economist than I am. How does the Federal Reserve make money, and how do we know that they're not keeping part of the profit for themselves?
Well, I mean, this is the way the system is set up. It's designed for them to, basically, whenever the Treasury, when the government wants to borrow money, they issue an IOU in the form of a bond. And they go to an auction, and they raise money to buy these bonds, and they take that money and they use it for spending. Of course, people in America buy those, people in China buy those, Japan, Europe. Federal Reserve is a lender of last resort, so it has to step in. That's the way the system is set up. It has to step in and buy any leftover bonds that didn't sell at the auction. It's a lender of last resort. And of course, when they buy these bonds, they aren't using any kind of hard-earned money. They're not taking money out of their savings account to buy this. They simply merely print it. So they print the money to buy the bonds. And then, of course, they charge interest to the government, to the Treasury, in order to loan this money. So they print the money out of thin air, and then they charge interest on it. In 2006, the Federal Reserve earned $406 billion in interest. We paid $406 billion on interest on the national debt alone. That was on the national debt. Now, a large percentage of that went to the Federal Reserve. Now, according to the documents, the Federal Reserve pays all this money back to the United States government because it's a kind and gentle beast. Well, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, it's very, very difficult to monitor or audit the Federal Reserve. In fact, Bloomberg just recently tried to sue the Federal Reserve to find out exactly where the money was going that the Federal Reserve was pouring out left and right, because obviously if the Federal Reserve was propping up other foreign banks or foreign entities, that would have been a problem. And they quickly found out, Bloomberg, with egg on their face, that the Federal Reserve had to do nothing of the sort. They had no power over the Federal Reserve. In fact, the Federal Reserve still to this day refuses to tell where all the money that it prints goes. So
basically, it was a matter of $2 trillion that the Federal Reserve had given to somebody, but they would not let Bloomberg, they would not let Congress, they would not let anybody know where that money had given. And of course, which is gone. And how do we know that they hadn't simply salted away in the pockets of some of the major banks? Because the Fed is owned. It is a private central bank owned by the banks. How do we know that not just transferring it to those banks that own it? They will not tell us where the money's going. So, but basically, David, they actually make money in the form of interest that the taxpayers pay on the money that they create out of nothing. It's the most amazing scam in the world. Does that answer your question?
Well, it sounds very complicated. I'm not sure that it answers the question. I don't understand how they can sell a bond without having some hard currency involved, money involved.
They create money out of nothing. It's all an illusion, but we pay interest on that. The American taxpayers pay the interest on that. It goes to the bank. Supposedly, then they're going to give it back. All the money they make is going to be going back to the Treasury. But since we've never been allowed to audit them in, over 80 years, we have no idea what's really going on. 90 years now. They were organized in 1913, and here we are in the year 2009, almost 90 years. Anything else you want to ask?
No, thank you very much.
All right, fine. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But people must understand that the central banks of the world work together in concert. There's a wonderful book. Jerry, are you acquainted with Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time?
Yes.
And on page 324, Professor Quigley explains that the central banks work together in secret meetings. Their ultimate goal is to establish a feudalistic system by which they will control the governments of the world. That is one of the most devastating quotations when you understand that these are the people. It's not that the governments control the central banks. The central banks control the government, and they are part of what I refer to as the invisible government. Any thoughts on that before we go to the next caller?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it's very, very imperative for people who really look back at our nation's founding, and they talk about our founding fathers, to realize that our founding fathers, when they fled England, they were really fleeing the Bank of England and its destruction that it had brought on the people. You don't really hear too much about the religious persecution early on. You hear about people protesting about the taxes being levied upon them by England. The early founding fathers were very, very cautious and very concerned about a central bank. And both of the two central banks, which still exist now in Philadelphia, you can go see them, they both failed when their charter expired. And, of course, Andrew Jackson put the second bank completely out of business, and he was determined to never let such a beast ever arise again. And, of course, in 1913, the Federal Reserve was created, and it was called Federal, which sounds so pretty, and then it called Reserve, which made it sound like it had a lot of money. But the truth is, it was just simply a veil for the government to, quote-unquote, borrow money to fund its ventures. And it's been a very devastating thing ever since.
It was a privately owned central bank. And one only has to read this story about Andrew Jackson's battle with the Second Bank of the United States. It took place in 1832 and 1833 and really up until the time he left office. And if you haven't read Andrew Jackson's farewell address in 1837, you need to read it, or it's included in our Financial Armageddon syllabus. One of the most important speeches ever given. And that same battle that Andrew Jackson fought in between 1832 and 1837 is still going on today. In fact, we are in the final stages of the battle, but we don't have an Andrew Jackson, unfortunately. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Let's go to Mike, who's calling us from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Stan. I wanted to bring up something about this term, the lender of last resort, which came up a few minutes ago. The Fed is the lender of last resort, so often spoken of in glowing terms in the media, like the saviors and the rescuers, but what's going on is they step in when there's no one else in the game, and they get the terms they want. They'll have their way with us every time. It's that simple.
But Jerry, what would your response be?
Oh, he's certainly right. I mean, this lender of last resort is not necessarily a positive term. It's just a factual term. They are certainly the lender of last resort. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good thing. In fact, it actually works to our detriment.
Well, let's get your telephone number off one more time if people like to get your excellent book.
Our website?
No, your telephone number.
Oh, telephone number, 918-827-5764.
That's 918-827-5764 and the website.
www.jrmi.org.
jrmi.org. We'll be back in just a moment. Mike, do you have anything else you want to ask? I guess we lost Mike there. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. You've got about 3 minutes to actually wrap up the program. Somebody just called in and said that Ron Paul, as of this morning, has 218 congressmen supporting his effort to audit the Fed. I think that's one of the most exciting things that's ever happened, if for no other reason that people are beginning to learn about the Fed and that the fact that they have never been privately audited. And people, I hope, are going to begin to understand and begin to study the central bank that really controls the government. But go right ahead.
In the 1890s, there was a sound money revolution where people began to realize that paper money was destructive. And so they began to move to gold and to metal. There was bimetallic debates and things, even the Williams Jennings Bryant era. But I believe we're going to see a sound money revolution soon. People are waking up to what's happening. I think Ron Paul is doing a fantastic job of sounding the alarm for the last several years. He's been saying the same thing over and over, and nobody seems to care to listen. But he's been a great advocate in this area. And so I believe that people are slowly waking up. It's going to take $8 gasoline. It may take $8 milk before people finally wake up and say, hey, what's the deal? And we'll go through another cycle where people will demand some sort of commodity backing for their money. They certainly don't want to be in the situation that Zimbabwe is in, where they have, you know, 1 billion percent inflation, or the Weimar Republic. But that's certainly where we're heading if something is not done immediately to solve the problems. And I don't know if we'll see that same type of inflation, but we will certainly see inflation that will be mind-boggling as far as how high it can go.
I certainly agree with you, and I share your concern. I think it's so vitally important that we educate people on finance. Most people really don't understand that we're so busy, making a living and living our lives and raising our children and going to church outings and things of that sort, that we don't have time to understand what's really going on. And yet, I believe that, of course, what is happening financially is vitally important, because I think it's going to lead to the demise of this wonderful nation. America did not have to be destroyed, but I believe there are people who are working behind the scenes who have a different worldview, because I think many of them actually worship a different God. I believe there are powerful spiritual forces at work here, and perhaps we're even seeing the unfolding of prophecy. How do you feel on that?
I believe you're right. I mean, is a very amazing time to be living. I mean, we're seeing all these things happen right before our very eyes. And, of course, the economic situation could not be more bleak. I mean, as we look forward, we see that nothing is really being done. I mean, Band-Aid after Band-Aid after Band-Aid is being placed upon all of our wounds. And we're
going to have to interrupt you. We're out of time. God bless. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Terry Robinson. His book is a very readable book, very well done as far as the background of the finances. It's a good primer on really what's going on today, and we recommend it to you. And then, of course, we'd like to know how it all fits together. I could suggest my talk on the financial Armageddon comes with a syllabus. It gives you the overview of the finances and how they manipulated this whole thing and created the current economic crisis. It didn't just happen by accident. It wasn't a mistake. It was not stupidity. It was intentionally done. And you go back and you find out that they passed the legislation to allow 36% or just unbridled interest, doing away with usury laws back in 1980. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they suddenly did away with the ability to go into bankruptcy readily. You know, in 2006, in anticipation for what's coming down the line, and step by step, they brought us to where we are today. And the question is, what's going to happen next? Well, you certainly need to hear our talk on the financial Armageddon with the syllabus. To go into the background of this, we gave a talk maybe 3 or 4 years ago called The Financial Tsunami with a Syllabus, and we still recommend that. We think it's important. We have a 4-CD set called Financial Armageddon, just like the DVD, but this is actually 4 interviews with key people who I think will help you to understand what's going on. One of them is Gerald Celente. We have, of course, Bob Chapman and several other of our people that really can give you an overview of what's going on and at least give you some ideas what you can do to try to protect yourself. Because, ladies and gentlemen, most people who have mortgages on their homes or in debt are going to end up losing everything. 2.5 million people lost their homes last year. 1.8 million people have already gone into foreclosure so far this year, and we're not through June. That suggests probably 3.5 million people will lose their homes this year. And next year, things are really going to get bad. And they're trying to tell you the green shoots are coming up, but don't you believe it. Those green shoots are mushrooms, poisonous, deadly poisonous mushrooms that are going to, of course, destroy the very fabric of our society. Well, certainly we carry the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and, of course, Fiat Money, Inflation in France. We have 2 older books, but they're so important to understanding what's going on. A book written in 1899 calling the Coming Crisis. And, of course, it simply goes into the battle of the bank with the people, and we're seeing the end result of that. He's writing from a perspective of about 65 years after Andrew Jackson's battle with the bank, but that battle is going on today. In fact, if you get our syllabus, The Financial Armageddon, you'll get a copy of the letter that Franklin Delano Roosevelt wrote to Colonel House in November of 1933, talking about Andrew Jackson's battle with the bank and how that battle was going on in 1833. And as he said, this battle would be fought today only on a much larger scale. Well, we're in the final stages of that battle. And other than Ron Paul, there's nobody out there. He's doing a great job, as good a job as he possibly can. And we need to help him. But you've got to understand what's going on. Not only if you hope to save our nation, but if you hope to save yourself. Because most people are going to end up losing everything they have before this financial collapse is over. As they destroy the value of the currency, they destroy your pension, your annuities, your insurance policy, your bonds, your stocks, everything you have that's mediated in dollars will be destroyed. Whereas, of course, Keyes had said, and certainly Alan Greenspan said in his book,